61 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information on all that Carthage offers is at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We are finishing up the week and starting the month of October with Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. And President Albrecht wanted to be sure that this interview aired on Friday, October 1st, since October is National Manufacturing Month. And we're very excited about a special guest who is from the Manufacturing Institute of Washington, D.C., which we will explore and talk about in just a moment. And we'll introduce our special guest in just a couple of minutes. But first, President Brian Albrecht, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. Always a pleasure to be here. I am shocked that it's already October, although I should not be surprised. I can see the leaves turning colors. And in my yard, actually, some of the leaves are falling already.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We know what that means. So there's a couple of things we want to talk about before we get to our very special guest. And I know one of the things that you wanted to talk about is the whole matter of COVID vaccine and vaccinations and trying to encourage more and more people to get vaccinated. It's as simple as that. How is Gateway joining in that effort?
Well, thanks for asking, Greg. You know, this is on the forefront of everyone's mind, I think. How do we protect ourselves and our community? And as you know, we've talked about it on the program. We're doing so much to make sure that our campus stays safe and that we can invite students and community members in to participate in the education and training programs that we have. And we all know that the frontline defense is the vaccine. And so we're working hard at Gateway not only to encourage our own staff, but our students to participate in getting the vaccination. It is going to not only allow us to continue to do our work, but in the long term, allow our students to fulfill their lifelong dreams of achieving a college degree. And we need to do that by keeping our campuses safe. So this last week, we announced our incentive program. These are funds that are allocated to colleges and universities to help prevent COVID from spreading throughout your campus and to provide awareness programs and to make sure that everyone is at least informed of the impact of what COVID can have on themselves and their families. So the incentive program is the use of some of the federal funds to encourage our students to get the vaccination. If you've not been vaccinated and you're a student at Gateway, you're eligible for a $500 cash incentive. If you have been vaccinated already, you're also still eligible, but it's in a drawing. We're going to award 110 $1,000 scholarships.
Wow.
At the end of November. We're doing that in honor of our 110th anniversary. We're hoping that we have more than 110, so we have to go back and seek additional support. So if you're a student at Gateway, please read your emails that have come through and some of the announcements that are being posted, because we want you to know that we want to invest in your health and safety through the incentive program.
Cool idea.
Thank you.
Cool idea. I know that you want to announce the appointment of Gateway's newest student trustee, and it might be good for you to include a word of explanation about what a student trustee does.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, because I'm always so excited to talk about our students. And this one in particular, Tara Ramos, she is our new student trustee. was a little over a year ago that our Board of Trustees at their summer retreat really encouraged us to take a look at how do we amplify the student voice here at Gateway. Mm-hmm. And we do that in many ways, right? We have United Student Government. We have student life activities. Many of our programs are directed around the support for students. But to have a student serve on the trustee level raises the whole value of the student voice. And we've had some great student trustees, including our most recent before Tara was Megan Barr. And you might recall that Megan has been appointed by Governor Evers to serve on the state board for Wisconsin's technical colleges. So she now represents all 16 colleges, 300,000 students across the state. So a big shout out to Megan. She is doing a remarkable job. And to replace Megan, Tara was appointed by the United Student Government, and she had her first board meeting last week and did a great job for us. And I know she's going to be an inspiration to many other students as she continues to share her story. Unique thing about her, we'll have to have her on the radio show. She has her husband graduated from Gateway, her two sons, one graduated, one's in school at Gateway, and she is a student at Gateway as well. So the whole family is all in. So hope she's listening. We're really proud of everyone.
Right, and I think it's a great idea to have her on a future program. So you took the words right out of my mouth. Finally, give us an update on this fall semester, which is already very much underway.
Oh, my gosh, it's almost halfway through already. I can't believe how fast it goes. But you and I have a little bit of advantage. Our offices are in the Inspire Center, so we see students every day, and we can feel the excitement and sometimes the anxiety around quiz time. But I have a chance to interact with students at that level. But this week, we actually held our all-employee learning day, which is a day that we set aside each year to run over 99 different workshops for our employees on self-improvement, on technical applications, on new initiatives throughout the college. And I had a chance to speak with everyone about the future of Gateway, and then did a breakout session, which we had a lot of fun at as well. But that investment in our own employees leads to a stronger culture here at Gateway and ultimately greater rewards for our students in the classroom. So I want to wish all of our students great success here in the next couple of weeks as we work through the fall term. And before you know it, we'll be thinking about our spring term again.
Crazy. Well, let's get to our very, very special guest that you have invited onto the program, Carolyn Lee, who is Executive Director for the Manufacturing Institute in Washington, D.C. Tell us about your connection with her and what prompted this invitation.
Oh, I am so honored to have Carolyn Lee with us today. My work in the Manufacturing Institute goes back well over 10 years already, and Gateway's always been involved in helping to bring focus on the importance of manufacturing. We do a lot on our campus with the celebration of Manufacturing Month, with activities for students. As you know, a few years ago, we built out a really robust infrastructure for Industry 4.0 in our S.C. Johnson Integrated Manufacturing Engineering Technology Center. Carolyn and I serve on a national board together that helps promote career development, and I'm always inspired by the work that the Manufacturing Institute does at the local level to help schools advocate, promote, connect with employers. We're going to learn a little bit about that today, but the organization is located in Washington, but I can assure you that they are present in communities just like we have here at Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth County.
Very good. Carolyn Lee, I hope you're still with us.
I am.
Very good. We welcome you to the morning show. We're really glad that you can join us. Right off the bat, it would be great if we could learn a little bit about who you are, where you come from, and kind of your professional life's path that ultimately took you to the top of the Manufacturing Institute as its executive director.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you for having me. It's great to be with both of you. And it's funny to think that we're already halfway through the fall semester here for the Gateway College. So, you know, I think Brian, the first segment talking about COVID and the vaccine kind of brings us so full circle to kind of my own journey. So I come from a manufacturing family. I think one of my earliest memories of my grandfather centers around him talking about manufacturing and the arsenal of democracy and why it was so important for himself to make sure that he served during World War II. He was a machinist, so it was really hard for him to be drafted. And that is one of the, whenever I think of manufacturing, I first go to my grandfather and think about that because, you know, centered in the middle of the family, how I was raised was really about the importance of service to the country and the importance of manufacturing to make sure that the country is strong and that we are able to have all of the things that we have. And so I grew up in on Long Island in New York, which had been a really big aerospace hub when I was a kid. Of course, coming out of World War II. And the first thing I did was I went down to Washington after college and started working on Capitol Hill. That was my view of how to serve. And I spent 4 years in the House and 4 years in the Senate. So I have an equal understanding of why both sides work the way that they do, both sides of the Congress. And then moved on actually to work for 3M Company and doing federal and state policy for them, a great manufacturer from the Midwest, of course. And then kind of journeyed through a couple different positions in D.C., ended up at the National Association of Manufacturers, again, working on behalf of manufacturers, talking about tax policy and domestic economic policy items. And then one day our CEO, the IM CEO and the chair of the MI board, suggested that, hey, maybe I take on this new opportunity to really dig in and bring the Manufacturing Institute into its next evolution and work on workforce development. And so when I looked at all the experiences that I had, all the policy experience and all of the kind of life experience with manufacturers, it seemed like a great opportunity. And so I've been doing this about 4.5 years, and it's truly the greatest job I've ever had, because we're working on behalf of individuals and helping them get their best life through manufacturing careers, which of course we know are well-paying and with good benefits and a career-long opportunity to learn and grow. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Carolyn, I'm always inspired by our guests, but your story really resonates strongly with me. And maybe it's because I mentioned this last week we held an all-employee learning day, and as a part of my preparation, I was reading more about the history of Gateway. And we were founded in 1911, and actually, in World War II, our cabinet-making class developed some of the cabinets for the barracks for soldiers, and I know how deep that meaning can be, and so thank you for sharing your story and what really resonates strongly for you about manufacturing. And you're so right, your experience comes full circle now in helping us lead our nation in rebuilding that dignity of work, that inspiration that young people can have and build great careers around manufacturing.
Thank you. Exactly. And you know, and the thing is, you know, I started with Arsenal Democracy. I don't think I completed the full story loop there, but, you know, Brian, you talked about COVID and the vaccine, and that's a product of manufacturing, right? It's manufacturing that's gotten us this far in battling the pandemic, and it's manufacturing that's going to get us through the other side. And so I think, you know, my historical orientation on the Arsenal Democracy has come full circle to the arsenal of healthcare. And that's what's going to get us through here. But we then have to activate it, right? And that's where, you know, the incentive program you're rolling out with Gateway's community and students is so critical.
So tell us more about the organization which you now head, the Manufacturing Institute. What is its purpose? How long has it been around?
Sure. So actually, the MI, as we call it, was created in the mid-70s by a number of members of the National Association of Manufacturer Board. And the idea was to really create a nonprofit organization. We are a 501c3 public charity focused on competitiveness. And about the mid-90s, the mission evolved to really center on workforce development, because it is the thing, of course, that unites and is a common need for manufacturers of all sizes, whether you're the largest manufacturers in the world or you are the mom and pop, you know, small manufacturer, which I grew up going to, the shop with dad and my grandfather doing small jobs, you know, counting pieces and deburring things, occasionally using the drill press, except for they didn't let me do it after I drill pressed myself. And, you know, we work to make sure that manufacturing of every sector, every size of company, our job is to help build the pathways, highlight what's worked, share the learning, so that locally, because workforce development is truly a local and regional issue, but as our role as a national entity is to find and cull the information of what works best, how people can institute new programs, how do we stand up partnerships and those local networks, really to build that training pipeline. And so while we operate a couple of different training programs ourselves and national training platforms, the largest part of our work is really working to identify, well, how do we accomplish the needs and fill the pipeline so we can inspire, educate, and empower the workforce of today and tomorrow, which is the MI's mission. So that is, how do we change the perception of the sector? And Manufacturing Day is key to that, and I know we'll talk about that. But then how do we make sure that we're building the training pipeline so that people are ready for the job that we have today and the future as we continue to evolve into 4.0 and all of the new technologies that are to come?
I'm so excited to hear that. You know, when you mention words like deburring or drill press, I get all excited because that's basically how I grew up too. My dad worked in a manufacturing setting, and the company built paint rollers, right? They made paint rollers. So I would spend my time there after high school doing some drafting work and getting out into the shop floor and seeing how things were made. And oftentimes we deny young people the opportunity to see how things are made. And I think what you're talking about is building that awareness through partnerships and finding new avenues of support for young people. Seeing is believing. And now, of course, today's innovative manufacturing sites centers have so much more to offer for career paths for young people. So I'm excited for what you already represent. But really what I think about when we talk about the Manufacturing Institute, it's the voice and it's the connecting voice between school educators and manufacturers. And I think that's so critical because there's not enough people talking about the great jobs in manufacturing.
So, Carolyn Lee, maybe you could explain to us the place that manufacturing has always had and continues to have in our overall economy, and kind of the story behind maybe how its position in our overall economy has changed over the years, and kind of the reasons why manufacturing is so important for the overall well-being of our local, state, national economy.
Absolutely. So manufacturing is, you know, it is certainly a different size sector than it was, say, in the 50s and the 60s, 70s. But manufacturing is still a truly, truly significant and impactful part of our overall national economy. Excuse me. As of July of this year, we had 12.4 million workers in manufacturing. I think we're about the 12% of the overall economy. We manufactured and exported about $1.2 trillion in goods last year alone, and that was during the pandemic. And we contributed over $2.4 trillion to the U.S. economy in the first quarter of this year. So when we talk about manufacturing, you know, manufacturing is still an enormous impact on the economy. And in fact, if U.S. manufacturing in the U.S. was its own economy, it would be the eighth largest in the world. So oftentimes people think, oh, you know, we're not where we were in the heyday. Well, we are. We still have a significant role in the economic health of the sector. And the great thing is for us is that people understand. Our surveys and our research shows that actually people have a really high value of view of manufacturing as its impact on the overall economy, but too few parents see it as a future for their children. And that's why we have this perception gap that is a significant drag on our ability to fill these jobs. And I know we'll talk more about that. But for manufacturing, we're one of the best paid economic sectors. We have one of the highest rates of pay and benefits, over $88,000 annually on average. That's a national average. And more so than many other sectors, we provide health care and also retirement benefits for our industries as well. So, you know, we are a that is 92% of manufacturing employees were eligible for health insurance. So we have great benefits as well. But the thing is that manufacturing, people view it as a monolithic job, but in fact, there are career pathways for really everybody. So you need creators and you need designers and you need builders and fixers and you need tinkerers and innovators, but you also need programmers and, you know, coders and cybersecurity. And so there is there is truly an opportunity for everybody with every skill set and every kind of interest in manufacturing, which is truly a significant part of the overall economic sector and the health of the country. And we know that locally, manufacturing also significantly impact local economic health. So for every $1 in direct income in the manufacturing sector, there's another $3 that are earned someplace else. And so locally, that means for every one employee, you have another 3.4 workers elsewhere who are supported in that local community. And that's truly, truly impactful.
It's so important. I mean, just look at Southeast Wisconsin. It parallels everything Carolyn is talking about. And that's still over 25% of our economic base is built around manufacturing. And the diversity of the job sets in manufacturing is so different and so unique that it's often overlooked. But you're right, the designers, the creators, the makers, the fixers, the IT specialists, the logistics specialists, and it goes on and on. And that's what's so creative about Southeast Wisconsin is that we mirror that because that's our roots. You know, 100-plus years ago, this was a very strong manufacturing base, and it still is. It's just a different type of manufacturing with new skill sets. And I think that's what Manufacturing Day is all about. That's what MI is bringing to us in the conversation, and it's certainly what Gateway is advocating for young people to understand.
For those of you just joining us, my guests today on the morning show are Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, and Carolyn Lee, who is executive director of the Manufacturing Institute in Washington, D.C. And you are hearing this conversation on October 1st, and October happens to be National Manufacturing Month. So that is why we are focusing on this important issue and topic today. Carolyn Lee, we have a local CEO so well known throughout the community, Nick Pinchuk from Snap-on Tools, who often likes to quote the National Association for Manufacturing and the call for more skilled workers. And he likes to say that there needs to be an American calling to inspire young people to pursue careers in manufacturing, probably something akin to what you were speaking about in terms of the sense of service, which you learned from your own parents and in the home in which you grew up. So what would your advice be to schools, teachers, mentors, parents, in terms of what can be said to help young people understand about this part of our economy and the opportunities that are there and the difference that they can make if they pursue career paths in this sector?
So, you know, that is a terrific question. You know, Nick Pinchuk is truly an icon and a lion in manufacturing. And he has been a tremendous partner and is actually a member of the Manufacturing Institute's board of directors as well. Nick, when he talks about the opportunities of manufacturing, I think he does a tremendous job of talking about the dignity of work, the importance of the work that we do, and how manufacturing is centered in families and economies and the strength of the nation. So one thing that we all need to do, and the Manufacturing Institute for many years has been doing a talent study with Deloitte, and we just updated our most recent one and released it in May of this year. And what we found is that by 2030, we would need to fill 4 million jobs, and of those, 2.1 million will go unfilled because we don't have the people with the skills.
Wow.
And in 2030 alone, that could be $1 trillion in lost GDP for the U.S. So, you know, that is kind of the macro, but then when you bring it home, and so the question about how should schools and teachers and parents help in changing the perception of manufacturing, and how do we explain how the jobs are so different today? You know, part of it is we need to change the perception, and that's why days like today, National Manufacturing Day, are so critical. Where entities all across the manufacturing sector, all across the country, are encouraged to open their doors, and this year, of course, a lot of that is virtual, to open their doors virtually or live and bring people in and show them what's at the center of modern manufacturing, to see the innovative technologies that we're using each and every day, to see how the things that we use and we need for our daily lives, how that's made and how it comes together. And it's not... You know, this is kind of a generational shift. You know, after World War II, the baby boomer generation, the Generation X, the early part of Generation X, understood manufacturing because they knew somebody in it. And if you do know somebody in it, you're two-thirds more likely to go into manufacturing because you're aware that it's there. But unfortunately, too few people know that these opportunities exist. That's why manufacturers need to go out proactively and tell our story. That's why that's at the center of our Creators Wanted campaign that we're running with the National Association of Manufacturers, to change the perception and tell the story and to go to where prospective workers are and to help them experience some of the key attributes in modern manufacturing, and then to work with local companies and local educators to help build those pathways so when you come through and you're inspired, that you can solve, build, create, fix, innovate, that you're part of this, that you could be part of this economy, part of the economy, that you have a place to go to learn. And so we have to tell our story. We can't just hang the sign. You know, my dad would say, oh, we just hung the sign and people would come, and that doesn't happen anymore. No, it doesn't. And so we have to be more proactive, and it's telling our story. But we have a fantastic story to tell. And there's nothing like, so I love about Manufacturing Day, and I can't wait for COVID to be in the rearview window so we can do this again. You know, to be out with a student in a facility and to watch their eyes light up the way mine continues to do when I see how things get made and the importance of it and the innovation around it. And it's just cool. We got to bring that to life.
I'm so excited. I'm thinking we need a sign, but a neon sign that blinks on and off, right, so we can attract people's attention. But
exactly.
Carolyn, you talk about it so eloquently and so with so much enthusiasm, and I know Nick does as well. He is absolutely, as you mentioned, a lion in the industry, and what a voice he has for the Partnerships for Education and Workforce Development. One of the unique things that also I think is important that we continue to invest in the professional development of our teachers so that we teachers understand the skill sets that are required for industry. I know we have put a lot of focus on not only alignment with our K-12 system to help build pathways, but then inspire teachers and their students around automation, virtual reality, robotics. There's so many new technologies that can play into experiencing manufacturing. So I'm right with you on everything you said, and we're so proud to have Nick in our community. But many corporations are now starting to do just what you're talking about, open their doors and demonstrate some of the new technologies to keep kids engaged.
There is, of course, a well-known shortage of workers, in just about every sector of the economy, but certainly in manufacturing as well. Can you tell us more about that and maybe help us understand if there are certain areas of manufacturing in which worker shortage is especially acute?
Unfortunately, there is no area that is safe from the worker shortage right now. Manufacturing has an all-time record high of number of openings. In July, according to the Department of Labor, we had 889,000 open jobs across the sector. And yet we've also hired over 400,000 people in the last 6-8 months as well. And so we have a tremendous, tremendous need all across the sector. There is no company I've spoken to this year that has not told me they have open jobs today that they're looking to fill. And so, and it's all skill sets. It's everything from forklift operator. And I'll say to those listening, if you're looking for an opportunity and you want a job and you need a job quickly and COVID's been a challenge for you, you can get a forklift operator certificate and be qualified for one of those jobs in a couple of days. You know, it's not a long course of study, right? It's a couple of days. But yeah, we also need highly skilled technicians. That's a couple of years and everything in between. And that's why partnerships with the educational institutions like Gateway and other technical colleges across the country are so critical, because we need to make sure that what we're training matches what the companies need. And but the number of open jobs now is just truly tremendous across the country. And I think in the overall economy, for every one open job, there's only 0.94 people to do it. So the math there obviously doesn't equal. Right, you've got one open job and less than one person per job. So even if everything was just automatically matched, we'd be at a deficit, and that is a huge challenge for our economy.
Yeah, you're so right, and I know we see it around here as well. Everyone's hiring and trying to find the right types of skills, and you mentioned the idea of an entry-level skill like forklift driver, and that can ladder into, through some career paths, into advanced skills. So it's not what we would refer to as a dead-end job. This is a type of career path that can lead to great rewards. And I'm always inspired when I meet executives and CEOs that started on the shop floor and now they're running their own business or supervising. And those are the kinds of opportunities that manufacturing can provide for you.
Hmm. Absolutely.
Carolyn Lee, as we've already mentioned, October is Manufacturing Month, and I suspect that there are things going on around the country to help commemorate National Manufacturing Month, and I should think the Manufacturing Institute probably has a hand in some of those. Can you tell us about some of what is going on?
Sure. Well, we are actually, we're kicking off, actually just yesterday, we will have launched a new episode on our Creators Wanted series talking about manufacturing, and that is the episode focused on youth engagement and what's happening across the sector on scaling the youth to meet the jobs, and that was created in partnership with Microsoft, and the Institute is talking about how companies and schools and communities should come together and training for the careers of the future. We are also launching next week in Ohio a Creators Wanted mobile experience where we'll be going into communities and working on regional gatherings to bring together, of course, safely with COVID protocols in place, to bring together local communities to help people see what the opportunities are in modern manufacturing with our immersive mobile experience. That is actually a series of escape rooms. It's pretty cool, and it's built for people of all ages. I've seen 50-year veterans of the sector go through it, and their eyes light up, and I've seen 12-year-olds go through it, and their eyes light up. So it's a lot of fun. But we launched that next week in Ohio, and then we'll be moving through several states through the rest of this year. And the goal there is really to bring communities together, to bring prospective workers in, parents and influencers, and I know we'll talk about that more in a minute, but also local community members to learn what do we need to do to enhance our career development pathways, and then also to help people see for themselves. It's kind of a mobile manufacturing day, and let people see for themselves some of the skills and the attributes that we are so desperate to have in our workforce here in manufacturing, and the communication and the teamwork and the innovation and problem solving that are inherent human skills and that are key to a successful and strong sector. And so we'll kick that off. And then this week, Manufacturing Day, you know, there have been a number of events, and because of COVID, you know, a number of those will be virtual, but we also have the opportunity to extend Manufacturing Day throughout the year. I know a couple of companies that are looking forward to spring events in the hopes that COVID in their areas and their regions will have come to a little bit less intense as it is right now with the Delta variant, and that vaccination rates will be higher, and that they'll have the ability to bring more people in. So, you know, we always say any day can be Manufacturing Day, although the national day is October 1st. We are hopeful to extend the window for opportunity because the jobs are there and we need people to fill them, and we have a great story to tell.
I love that. Every day can be Manufacturing Day.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
And yeah. We celebrate it here in Wisconsin for the entire month of October, so there are a series of activities. But I love the escape room. I want to try that sometime, and I hope as your travels, if you make it to Wisconsin, that you're able to stop in and see some of our activities. But we have on October 16th, Women in Manufacturing Day, a big event. Usually between 50 and 75 folks come out for that. We expose new career paths for young women. We have a great partnership with Sterrett Corporation. We'll be using members of the Sterrett team to help our school administrators understand the importance of quality in manufacturing. We're going to do some really great things on campus with tours for students so they can come in and see our 3D printing lab and experience what CNC is all about and do the virtual welders. And we also have guest speakers that will be on campus to talk about manufacturing. And many of our employers still find ways to invite groups into their companies. So I know Mike Reeder is a good example over at Precision Plus, opening his doors for internships, youth apprenticeship programs, and finding ways to connect our schools with their opportunities in exploring careers in manufacturing. So October, the entire month for Wisconsin, and we'll start right now today on October 1st with National Manufacturing Day.
Carolyn Lee, are there any other celebrations or commemorations beyond Manufacturing Day that you want to tell us about?
Yeah, you know, the Institute, we really are looking at all of the different populations that we're seeking to bring in and that are currently underrepresented in the sector and that we're seeking to build those pathways in. So we have actually the nation's largest Women in Manufacturing program through our STEP Women's Initiative. That is, STEP stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Production. And actually, we're headed into our 10-year anniversary of that work. But the whole work for STEP came from research we did about 15 years ago when we went out to women and said, why is it that we have this huge gender gap in the sector? and what do we need to do to close it? And what we found through our research was that women felt like they were lacking the network and the relationships and the community of support for them to achieve and to come in and stay in manufacturing careers. And from that, STEP was launched. And it's really, in addition to a series of our awards gala every year where we highlight the women who are leading in the sector, both the, and it's from the shop floor to the C-suite, but it's also about leadership engagement, leadership training, and then helping them learn how to pay it forward to engage the next generation. We also use that platform to engage women in communities all across the country, to engage, now we're expanding to engage women in community colleges and high schools as well, where we want them to see what the opportunities are and then hold up those role models and let them walk in the footsteps of those who came before them and really help close the gender gap. We're able to close the gender gap by 10%. So today, about 29% of the manufacturing workforce is made up of women. If we close the gender gap by 10%, we'll close the skills gap by 50%. And so closing that gender gap is truly instrumental. And that goes to, you know, and that started off our work with a number of underrepresented communities. We also have a large diversity and inclusion initiative, and that is not only to help manufacturers learn how to engage, but it's also embedded in all of our work to make sure that we're engaging underrepresented folks from underrepresented communities, such people of all ethnicities, all abilities, all educational experiences and backgrounds, orientations, so that we can make sure that we're attracting the best and brightest minds, those people with the passion and the ability to succeed in our sector, regardless of where they come from and what their experience and their background is, because we really do have a role for everybody here. And so our D&I work is at the center of our work to engage the future workforce, but then also to retain the workforce we have, because we know that is so critical for manufacturers. And one of those populations that need special attention, because they too don't know that the manufacturing careers are here, are those in our military and veteran population or military and veteran community. So through our Heroes Make America initiative, we are engaging transitioning service members, military spouses, folks, Guard, Reserve, and as well as fully separated veterans in manufacturing training and manufacturing career awareness, and then helping place them in manufacturing careers. And that has been truly one of the most rewarding programs I've worked on since I came to the Institute. And our ability there to help close the skills gap with people who are from the military and veteran community, those who have served, is truly remarkable. And when you think about what attributes they bring to our workforce, you know, they know how to work on teams, they know how to lead, they know how to communicate, and they know how to focus on a singular mission. And those are all, you know, key parts of manufacturing. But for just like the broader population, too few of people inside the military community know that manufacturing might be a future for them. And so much of our work there is about perception and awareness of these careers. And then we couple that with the training and then the pathways in. And it's truly been critical. And those activities, both STEP and Heroes Make America and our FAME apprenticeship platform, the national program that we took on from Toyota, actually founded it and then transitioned it to the Institute in 2019. So we're operating an apprenticeship program in 13 states today. In over 30 chapters that are built locally with employers working together with economic development and other workforce entities locally, but then with critically with community and technical schools who are the trainers and the method. And the same outcomes and success are truly tremendous, with over 85% of graduates getting hired by their companies and over 85% of participants in the program graduating with this two-year degree in advanced maintenance technician associate's degree when they come out. And so it's a fantastic program, but it's that combination of bringing together the business community with the workforce development community and our education partners that make that so successful. And, you know, that's at the heart of all of the programming that we do, because none of us can solve this alone. It really is about these partnerships so that we can dig in on the thing that works and hopefully, you know, get where we're going a little bit faster.
Well, you're so right, the idea of partnerships. And I can really appreciate all the work that you're doing to help bring organizations together and to support populations that maybe haven't had the similar exposure to manufacturing. Specifically, you shout out the importance of women in manufacturing. As a dad of a young woman who is a biomedical engineer working in a manufacturing company, it's so critical that we help young women understand what all of those opportunities are, and also love the work you're doing with veterans. We have a great partnership with Rockwell Automation in developing a specific targeted program called AAM. It's our Advanced Manufacturing Certificate for veterans in partnership with Rockwell. So keep up the good work. I think it's just a great way to help bring awareness to the importance of manufacturing by having specific programs like this.
Hmm. We're, of course, talking, among other things, about the whole matter of career guidance and guiding students as they make decisions about what career path is right for them. So, Carolyn Lee, what would your advice be for counselors, teachers, parents, mentors, in terms of having at hand the most useful kind of information? And what do you think needs to be at the heart of the message when it comes to manufacturing and what it has to offer?
Well, it's a fantastic question. And Brian mentioned it earlier, you know, the importance of teachers and counselors and of course, parents is often underestimated as we think about the influences on our children about the pathways that they take. You know, I have young children, 7th grade, 5th grade, and 3rd grade. And, you know, I think about what are the things that they're interested in. Well, sometimes, especially for the younger kids, it's what do I put in front of them? What choices do I make as a parent? You know, I say, okay, you have summer camp options. It's this or this. It's not go out and find everything in the world and we'll see. You know, I choose and let them choose from the things I've selected. And so, you know, the advice that I give to parents and teachers and counselors is to find new information, to participate in things like in Gateway's Manufacturing Day, in our Manufacturing Day, and our activities and our information that's online. Learn about what the sector is today. Help, we need to help them dispel the old notion, kind of the old movie Be Real of what manufacturing jobs were. We need to dispel that notion by letting them see what manufacturing today is like. And so now it's hard to get into many facilities today because of COVID, unfortunately. And that's why we've spent so much time at the National Association of Manufacturers and the MI building virtual content that's available to all and available online. And you can find that these videos and the vignettes and the stories about people in manufacturing, as well as resources and tools to talk about manufacturing careers at careerswanted.org. And so we encourage all of the influencers, all of these key role models, to learn about what opportunities are out there. And key to this, and Brian, you alluded to this earlier, you know, there is not one manufacturing job. You don't come in today, and you should not expect to, and it's certainly not what the research says millennials and Gen Zs are looking for. There is no one job, 40 years, one job, and you retire. That doesn't exist. There is constant upskilling and learning. In 2019, we released a study. We found that manufacturers invested about $24 billion in upskilling their existing employees. That's not recruiting, and that's not training. You know, some of the work that we do about bringing people into the sector, it's $24 billion on their existing employees. And so once you're in, there's a huge opportunity for you to continually learn and grow. And the tools and the virtual content that we've created at CareersWanted.org really focuses on that, because we want to make sure that parents and teachers have an understanding that it's not a dead-end career. It's not one job and forever, but that they learn about what the dynamic opportunities and that ability to continue to grow. And that is core to what humans are, right, our human nature. We want to continue to learn and strive and evolve. And that opportunity is significant in manufacturing. So I would say look at those, talk to people, go in and see. And I know one of your Wisconsin manufacturers who I've worked with for a long time in Mequon, Eric Eisbister and Mary Eisbister down at Gentech, they had talked about and have done for many years a teacher apprenticeship program, so a teacher summer internship program where they bring teachers in to work in manufacturing to see, to learn, so when they go back, they're talking about their own, Jenna, they're talking about their own experience in that sector, and it's a firsthand knowledge, and we need to do more things with that. It's really a tremendous opportunity for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you gave a shout out to Mary over at GenMed. They do a terrific job, and it kind of reminds me of, I think everyone on the program today would understand the idea of Take Your Child to Work Day. It was a national movement to bring young people into work, and I think I remind myself that it's like either Take a Teacher to Work Day so we can see how things have changed, or maybe we reverse it and just say, show your kids what you do, right? So many of us go to work and we go home and we don't talk about what we do, and I think what you're suggesting is that let's get in front of this and help young people understand what is available for different careers and share your own career and some of the opportunities that it's provided for you or maybe others in your family and bring that mentoring kind of role back. So great suggestions.
We are running out of time, but I do want to ask you about what employers should be thinking about as they seek to educate and recruit new employees. Any quick word of advice for them?
You know, I often tell employers that your young employees are your best ambassadors, and utilize those young employees, the fact that their excitement, they're new to the sector, the thing that they're doing, and send them into local high schools and community colleges to talk about the opportunities, because they're the most relatable for that generation. And too often we look at, okay, the executive levels of a company, but those young employees who are ready to do more are fantastic ambassadors, and we need to lean into that more often.
So before we finish out, we have time for two more questions, but let's be real quick with talking about COVID. It's been a challenging time for just about everybody. Has the manufacturing sector responded to COVID effectively, do you think?
Yes. You know, manufacturers, the grand majority of manufacturing stayed open throughout the drop. You know, when everything shut down last March and in March of 2020, manufacturing stayed open. And when you think about that, of course, it makes sense. We make the things that we need every single day. So as you think about essential workers, yes, our frontline healthcare, our grocery workers, all the people who made sure we had the products and the supply chain we needed, but also all the manufacturers who make the things we needed every day, from the toilet paper to the food to the medical devices and products that we needed to combat the virus directly, and the PPE. So manufacturing did evolve very, very quickly to make sure that we were able to operate even more safely under COVID procedures, and that we were constantly evolving to meet the new science as it came out. So we learned to do a lot of things differently. Safety is always front and center for manufacturers about how they operate day to day. But safety under COVID protocols was a whole new thing for us to learn. And we did a tremendous job in the sector of rising to the challenge, meeting the need, and making sure we were still making things here in the U.S. to meet our needs. And yes, there are supply chain impacts. Yes, there's still, it's hard to get some products because we have a global supply chain and a global, you know, network of where pieces come from and how things are made, but we are all learning how to get there faster. And so, you know, I think there are some things that we can change from a policy perspective to make improvements to, you know, infrastructure investment and that kind of thing, so that we don't have, you know, backups at the ports and our bridges and our roads and all of that. But manufacturing rose to the challenge and is helping us and leading the way in our ability to beat back COVID.
I could not agree more, Carolyn. I know that we all absolutely owe respect to all of our healthcare workers, our law enforcement, our fire officials, everybody that's been on the front line. And I just want to add that that's also our manufacturers. Our manufacturing team and our additive manufacturing team produced ear savers, face shields, 3D masks. They printed them all, donated them to local law enforcement agencies and hospitals during this time. And so, yeah, you have to still make things in order to thrive and survive in our communities. So essential workers were critical to the success of kind of transitioning now, hopefully, past COVID some point here.
In our last 30 seconds or two, Wisconsin has a contest called Coolest Things Made in Wisconsin. And that's a long list, things like Harley-Davidson motorcycles, Sargento cheese, et cetera, et cetera. What's the coolest thing you have ever seen manufactured, Carolyn Lee?
Oh, that's so hard. I'm gonna chicken out instead of picking a product and say the thing that is amazing to me is not only what we make, but how we do it. And so when I was at an eye drop facility in Texas a couple of years ago, they made 1 billion individual vials of eye drops. And the machinery that it takes to do these things always amazes me. And so, you know, yes, what the product is amazing, but I've always been fascinated by how we do it. And that's why something like Manufacturing Day, whether it's live or it's virtual, go and see for yourselves. For all those listening, go and see for yourselves how we do these things, because it really is truly eye-opening.
A very mature, intelligent answer. I'm not surprised a bit. Carolyn Lee, Executive Director for the Manufacturing Institute in Washington, D.C. What a pleasure to have you on the morning show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
And Brian Albrecht, the President of Gateway Technical College. Great to have you with us as well. We look forward to seeing you in November.
Thank you, Greg. Happy Manufacturing Day, everyone.
I'm Greg Reber. Monday on the morning show, we will preview the upcoming Aspire conference at Carthage and look at the popular television show Grey's Anatomy. On Tuesday, Art Sear gives us his analysis of current events. Wednesday, the author of a marvelous book, Catch Us When We Fall, which circles around...